Those are all the areas in which we've seen benefits come about as the result of creating the Revenue Operations Group.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we unpack the future of sales together. We will bring you the very best experts who can help you to navigate the pathway forward and shortcut the way there, learning from their successes, their failures, and everything that they can unpack to help us to take our first steps. Now, before we get stuck into today's conversation, we would love it if you would subscribe to our channel so that you never miss an episode. And also, if you love what you hear, leave us a review. That really helps us to spread the good word, attract even bigger and better guests who can help us all to navigate the pathway forward for the future of sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. My name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host for the Redefining Sales Podcast. I am so unbelievably excited to bring you this week's episode. I have interviewed Kevin Ackhurst, who is head of sales for Japan and Asia Pacific at HubSpot. Kevin is just a wealth of knowledge and experience, and he brings so much in such a short space of time during this conversation. Kevin talks about how HubSpot only 2 years ago transitioned to a RevOps model, which is something we're really starting to hear a lot about. We're starting to see more and more companies bring together their revenue generating teams, be it sales, marketing, services, customer experience, pre-sales, and so on, to deploy a RevOps model. So we talk about some of the first steps to take, some of the learning, some of the challenges, some of the benefits, and how they also transition to revenue enablement as opposed to just pure sales enablement, and some of their experience from going through that journey. So there is honestly so much to be learned in that conversation. We, of course, tap into some of Kevin's experience in leadership around how he approaches diversity and inclusion. We also talk about some of the best career advice and the myths that he wants to bust as well, and some of the best investments he's made in himself. So it really is a conversation that covers a hell of a lot of ground. Now, I want to share a little bit about Kevin's bio with you before we get stuck into the conversation. So as I mentioned, Kevin is head of sales for APAC and Japan, and he's responsible for the business performance across ANZ, Japan, Singapore, and India. He's incredibly passionate about building great teams, achieving phenomenal results, and building businesses. And that absolutely comes through in this conversation. He's also responsible for culture, diversity, and inclusion, which is something that, again, really pulls through in this conversation and some of Kevin's answers. Prior to HubSpot, Kevin had spent 6 years at Google. He's also worked in senior key leadership roles at the likes of Juniper, and was at Microsoft as managing director for New Zealand and also vice president for sales and marketing across the APAC region. So this man has a wealth of knowledge that we get to unpack with him. Now, finally, before we get stuck into this conversation, a quick shout out from us. We have just announced that the doors are open for RevUp. If you have not heard, RevUp is Sales Redefined's offering where we are bringing together revenue generating teams to learn together from world-class leading experts. The lineup of experts that we have got our hands on is absolutely phenomenal. If you want to find out more about it and join us as we kick off in July, you can visit member.salesredefined.com.au. And the link is in the show notes. So doors are open at the moment. We will be starting as a cohort and going on the journey together. And then doors will be closed as we kick off on the 1st of July. So feel free to check it out. We would love to have you on board with us. So without further ado, let's kickstart our conversation with Kevin. Kevin, thank you so much for being here. Now, I want to spend every single minute that we have with you and dive straight in with our first question, if I may.
Absolutely.
So you have had one of the most sensational careers. I was absolutely loving looking through your LinkedIn profile and seeing the phenomenal companies you've worked for, from Microsoft, Google, now HubSpot, just truly an incredible career. And I'm really curious, as we're starting to get into FY24 planning mode, you were just saying yourself, you guys are just about to start your own FY24 planning. What's some of the growth strategies that across the board, across the variety of companies you've worked for, what growth strategies do you think have really stood the test of time that people should be considering now in their planning?
Well, the ones that I've really always adopted, they've always seemed to work out well for me. And I think I've had a strong career in terms of results in the variety of different jobs that I've had, have kind of been the following. So I believe very strongly in ethical growth. And what I mean by ethical growth is kind of two things. The first is that you don't make decisions for this month's revenue if they may actually cause challenges for you in the future. And the second is, as you make long-term decisions, you need to be thinking about whether or not you want to preserve the relationship with those customers for a long period of time. And in most cases, you do. And consequently, you have to make sure that you're doing things that will ultimately preserve those relationships for the long term. I do think there's a couple of other factors that sort of go into it as well. So things that I've always focused on, which I think are now becoming hallmarks of companies that grow very well, and we're seeing it more and more at the moment, are areas like diversity, inclusion, and belonging, particularly with respect to the team that you're building internally. The way in which you think about the empowerment of teams, I think that the more you empower teams, the greater the likelihood of bringing out the individual innovation and creativity in the people that you work with. And ultimately, and I probably should have said this first, solving for the customer. If you're helping the customer to meet their need as opposed to your need, you're likely to grow your organization significantly.
Yeah, I love that. And one thing I've actually admired about sort of following your journey a little bit on LinkedIn is you're actually fantastic as a leader at speaking up on some of these topics. I've really noticed that, and I find it really remarkable. A lot of us, you know, at times maybe we don't speak up. And I think that's something that you've been really fantastic about, talking about how you mentor diversity, inclusion, ethical business. You know, I've really noticed that come across on your LinkedIn.
I sincerely believe in the sort of principle of having strong opinions, but loosely held. So I think I have strong opinions, as shown by some of the posts I have on LinkedIn, and particularly recently in areas like the roles that people can play in organizations as they age. But I'm open to actually learning more continually and adjusting those opinions if necessary based on the things that I learn. And I think that being inquisitive is so important in terms of wanting to grow organizations.
I love that. I did a diploma in positive psychology years ago, and they talked about curiosity being such a superpower and really trying to leverage it, and almost your inner child.
Yes, very much so. In fact, I still think that my objectives for what I want to achieve in my life are the same ones that I had when I was sort of 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, okay, well, now we've got to ask, what's the objectives for you, for the 8 or 9 year old Kevin?
Well, I remember sitting in class, and I was in South Africa at that point in time, and the teacher asked us, we were about 9 years old, I think, and it was a class of about 30 people, and the teacher asked us sort of what we wanted to be when we were adults, okay? And my response got a lot of laughter from the class. I told them that I wanted to be happy, and I hold myself to that today. That is ultimately what I want. I see as success for myself is happiness versus a title or a role or a certain salary or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, I love that. Well, my son asked me the other day, I have a 4-year-old, what do I want to be when I grow up? And I liked that. I liked that at 38, he's asking me that, and I'm still considering what I'm going to be when I grow up. I thought that was fantastic. So good.
Absolutely. I continually think about it.
Well, he wants to be a king, so I'm not sure how we're going to go on that one.
Well, then from Australia, we do have a woman from Tasmania who is now a princess in Denmark and will one day be a queen. So anybody can be a king or a queen, I suspect.
Exactly. And I'm not the one to dampen his hopes on that. So, and he's half British, so you never know. Maybe he'll get a shot in the UK.
How far down the line is he in line for the throne?
Probably quite far. So with that, I'll probably go back to revenue growth, because I think I've got a better shot at that than making my son king. One thing I love about HubSpot is, you know, HubSpot, going back to your previous point, is actually all about how do we help the customer. You know, it's a very customer-centric business, is my perception. And HubSpot is around helping clients to accelerate their revenue growth. So as people are coming into their FY24 planning, as we were saying, and there's so much talk at the moment about it's an uncertain economy and what are we going to get this year and so on. Is there any other things from, I guess, more of a HubSpot lens that you're encouraging clients to think about in terms of how you accelerate your revenue growth?
Most important thing, I think, at the moment is recruiting. You only have to look at the issues that have occurred this year, particularly in the tech environment, in terms of the redundancies and layoffs that have happened right across the industry, to look at perhaps the mistakes that were made over the course of the last 2 to 3 years. Those recruiting decisions that get made have to think long-term about what's going to happen in terms of the company and what you want the company to look like in the future. I think that the focus in terms of that area to not make the mistakes that have been made over the course of the last 3 years are vital to success over the rest of this decade.
Yeah, that is really interesting. You know, every day I feel like I open up my phone and there's more redundancies and it's.
Unfortunately, yeah. Every time I log on to LinkedIn, there are more messages from people that I've known in companies I've worked at that have been made redundant. And some companies have followed up redundancies with more rounds of layoffs as well, which is very challenging for those companies and for the pe but particularly for the people that have been affected by it.
And is there anything in terms of clients as they're planning, you know, their sales and marketing strategies, anything sort of from a HubSpot lens that you think people really need to consider and take into account that, you know, it's so hard when we're doing strategies because sometimes I feel like we're the horse with blinkers and, you know, we don't necessarily see the outside lens and we sort of sometimes, you know, do what we've done or, you know, and so on. Is there any other considerations you would have for people?
Absolutely. So at HubSpot, we talk about this crisis of disconnection, the idea that essentially different parts of organizations, and I know it comes through in some of the other questions that you've sent me as well, this idea that different parts of the organizations don't engage with each other, and also that the software or the tools that they're using or the services that they're using aren't necessarily set up to align with the processes and the way in which the company actually operates. And so this idea of creating this connection between the different parts of the organization and between the tools and the way in which you want to express your engagement with your customers is solving for that process of disconnection. I think that a lot of investment has gone into place into tools and also recruiting, as I mentioned previously, which has not necessarily helped the organizer helped organizations to be much stronger. Particularly in areas like the connection between sales and services and marketing, and making sure that at the end of the day, between those three elements, you are solving for the needs of the customers that you're working with.
Yeah, you are absolutely talking my language, and I had this high up on my agenda to talk to you because I think for us, we initially saw it very much as a disconnect between sales and marketing, which is why we joke about being the marriage counselor between sales and marketing and thinking smarketing. But now I'm seeing it, as you said, being so much broader. And I think I read a stat that Gartner are saying by 2025, which is not that far away, 75% of the highest growth organizations in the world are going to deploy more of a revenue operations model. And exactly like you said, break down some of the disconnect between sales, customer experience, marketing, you know, all the different parts of the jigsaw. So my question there is, how do we start solving that disconnect? Because I think a lot of us and a lot of organizations are starting to realize, yep, it's almost like the leaky funnel, it impacts customer experience. But almost how do you go about repairing it? Because for some organizations, particularly with large teams and large divisions and different reporting lines, different KPIs, different barriers, what's the starting point for some of that?
I think you've touched on one of the potential answers already, and then I'll add an extra one as well. The idea of the RevOps or the revenue operations part of a business. So we've had a revenue operations sort of division within our business for, I think it must be going on for almost 2 years now. I think by the end of this, by the end of June, I think it'll be 2 years that we've had RevOps in place. And what RevOps has allowed us to do is to actually bring together the operations pieces of different parts of the business, sales, marketing, and services, to effectively work together. Now, where that is particularly beneficial is in future planning, also in the way in which you actually run your strategy on a month-by-month basis or quarter-by-quarter basis within the particular year, within the operations environment where you need different parts of particularly customer success and sales to be working closely together. In enablement, where you can actually align enablement across marketing, sales, and services. Those are all the areas in which we've seen benefits come about as the result of creating the revenue operations group that we have within HubSpot, which is a global group as part of our overall revenue generation team. The other part, though, is part of the reason why I joined HubSpot originally, which is the fact that we talk about this idea of a flywheel at HubSpot, which is about the customer engagement. And for HubSpot, a lot comes back to that customer interaction, which is the notion that in order for us to help the customer to be successful, you need sales, marketing, and services to be aligned. So that handoff process that happens in terms of qualified leads from the marketing team and feedback on the quality of those leads from the marketing team is so important. the way in which the sales team goes about using those, making sure that they are effectively using them, and then documenting what is needed for implementation for the customer becomes the next important step. That then gives you the handover across to the services organization for implementation, account management, ongoing support and delivery. And what that aligning those three elements in what we refer to as the flywheel allows us to actually be in a position that we're constantly monitoring what the needs of the customers are, and we're able to either offer them additional services or features that might be beneficial to them, or give them advice on things that they're not actually using, where they may have potentially purchased stuff from us which they don't need. And I think that only comes about because the information and the data that we have between those three areas is so closely aligned because of what I said previously, the creation of our revenue operational structure.
Oh my gosh, I now have 10, I've just been scribbling away. I now have 10,000 questions for you. So I'm going to come back to the flywheel. I've just made a note of that. If I can start with your transition to that RevOps model, I guess if you were going to give advice to someone now having gone through it 2 years on, what would you say, would be some of your advice of going on that journey? Because we know any sort of change can be challenging. As humans, we're not always the best at change, and it's taking a team on a journey. So what would be your advice having gone through that experience?
Patience. So when we first put in place the RevOps model, even though we had the flywheel already that had these strong relationships between the different parts of the organization, we established RevOps, and every group had particular ideas about what they wanted to see change when RevOps came together. Whether you were in sales, marketing, or services, there were strong views with respect to how RevOps should function. And the leadership within our RevOps organization, what the thing that they did was to actually spend a full year listening and understanding what they'd brought together. These different parts of operations had operated independently before, and it was the first time they'd actually worked together. And so rather than rushing into the changes that every group wanted, it took a year to make sure that they understood how these groups actually worked. They'd actually cross-pollinated these groups with people from different groups. So some people that were working in sales operations previously now work in marketing operations, for instance. So you have that cross-pollination of knowledge. And now we're starting to make the changes in terms of what the organizational structure looks like to bring about the promise of those things that all groups wanted them to move fast on in the beginning. I think that the decisions that we're making now with respect to those things are much better than the tactical decisions we would have made if we had just followed what the individual leaders wanted to do at that point in time.
Yeah, and I think it also gives you an understanding. I've spent most of my career in sales, and then more recently with our business, I've almost got a marketing hat on a lot of the time where I'm helping people with lead generation and working with marketing organizations. And I think you suddenly have a newfound appreciation when you've got that cross-pollination for somebody else's job. And I actually found that interesting about your career as well, because you've sat different sides of the fence and in a multitude of different roles. So you probably have been able to see things from those different lenses, I imagine.
Very much so. I'm very fortunate to have sat across marketing, across sales, across services as well, in roles across my career and had leadership positions in all of those different areas. I think what it gives me more than anything else is a level of empathy for what re is required in other roles.
Yeah.
So, for instance, while I'm sitting in a sales role at the moment, that doesn't mean that I don't think about the ramifications of deal-related decisions, decisions that we might be making in order to actually accelerate a particular deal might actually be really bad for our company because of the flow-on effects that might happen when we try to service and help that particular customer. So it's not unusual for me to push back on certain deals because whilst they will help me to achieve my numbers in the short term, they're actually going to negatively impact the company's results in the longer term, and we will likely lose that customer as well.
That is fascinating. I love that because I think that sometimes as a sales profession, we sort of sometimes, we've got to get the deal, we've got to get the number by the end of quarter, we're on the commission, you're under the pump. It is an under the pump career choice. And so it's not as often that, yeah, we're looking at the larger ramifications of what's the cost to onboard that client, what's the complexity to onboard that client, are we the best fit, can we even deliver what we've half of what we've promised?
Completely. I've seen decisions made where people have made promises to customers that cannot actually be delivered. If that hadn't been picked up during the approval processes internally, we could have ended up with a really challenging environment with those customers.
Yeah. So I want to go back to your transition. And if I can ask if there's any of these components you can talk to, you said around there's been a lot of benefits for going down that RevOps model. Do you mind pulling out a couple of the benefits that you've seen now, sort of 2 years into the journey?
I would say, so 2 years ago, I would have a business partner who was purely a sales operations person. And essentially, we operated in the silo where we were just thinking about how we ran the sales business within the organization. Now, what we've done with the establishment of the RevOps organization is created director level positions within our company that are responsible for the relationship with other parts of the revenue operations organization. So now I have a business partner who is the director of sales strategy in the RevOps organization, who's not only thinking about what he has to do to help sales to be prospective, but to be successful, but is thinking about the ramifications of the things that we're doing on other parts of the organization as well. And because we think similarly in that regard, we can make decisions that are beneficial to the company, not only to our particular business interests. What we've been working on over the course of the last week is making sure that, in particular, when we're assessing all of the deals that we do or all of the particular opportunities that we're looking to close with customers, we look at the ramifications of what that means for our services and delivery organizations, and are streamlining that area to actually speed up processing of those decisions, but also make sure that we are making less bad decisions. Like, you're still going to make bad decisions in an organization. I'm not going to pretend that you're going to remove every bad decision inside an organization. But I think the way we're looking at things now, by taking into account that relationship and engagement with other parts of the organization, and having a true partner that thinks not only about my business, but about their responsibilities across the whole business, helps to make our company better in solving for the customer.
I love that. I saw a LinkedIn study a while ago that was something like 9 out of 10 professionals do not believe there is an alignment between sales, marketing, other revenue generating teams on KPI, culture, communication. I think it was one third don't talk regularly. So I love what you're talking to there. And also, it stops the finger pointing of, well, that's customer services problem or that's operations problem and that sort of division. It really does break down those walls.
It does. It also helps to have a chief customer officer like we do that is responsible for sales, marketing, services, and revenue operations. And so what he's done is he's put in place an operating model that allows us to actually make sure that each particular business leader is engaged in and understands what other business leaders are responsible for. And that flows throughout the company. So in my role as responsible with responsibility across Japan and Asia Pacific, I have visibility and clarity and understanding of the metrics that drive our customer success business, our product support business, our marketing business, in addition to the ones I'm obviously responsible for in sales.
Yeah. And you've been, oh, I'm so in love with this topic now. This is absolutely, I just see it as such an opportunity. You mentioned before you also have made the change to revenue enablement and obviously bringing everyone together. What impact has that had switching from what I assume you used to do? And good question to clarify, sales enablement and sort of individual, and then coming to revenue enablement.
So we changed it from sales enablement to what we call go-to-market enablement. And to be clear, in our organization, we have two types of enablement. So we have leadership development and enablement that's associated with topics like diversity, inclusion, belonging, equity, and elements like that. And then we have the enablement pieces that are associated with more of the functions. In moving from sales enablement to go-to-market enablement, the team that is responsible for all of the enablement for sales is also responsible for all the enablement for services and for marketing as well. Now, what that does is it actually create there's often a large amount of crossover between enablement activities that are worthwhile or beneficial to the sales team, which could also be beneficial to customer success, for instance, or to contract managers, or to some of the frontline revenue marketers, for instance. And so we can actually, now we have forces that actually incorporate people from multiple different disciplines, as opposed to just a very siloed orientation around just sales enablement, which doesn't necessarily think about the ramifications of that for the other parts of the business. I think you can only do that when you change from disparate enablement organizations to an overall go-to-market enablement organization.
Yeah, I completely agree. We made the shift. We used to very much do sales enablement, and now we've really made that shift, and we will be very inclusive for pre-sales because we do a lot in IT and, you know, the extended marketing team and so on. And we've just seen so much benefit by everybody coming together and having that shared understanding and shared best practice, and also workshopping in the room together. Right, what is it that we want to go and execute from this, and not just sales have that story, but marketing don't have a clue what sales have now got inspiration that they want to go do. So we've seen so much success now from bringing them all together and creating that environment, and particularly where now a lot of us are working from home, we're working remotely, you don't get as many opportunities to come together in that fashion and learn together, shared understanding, brainstorm. So it's been really powerful.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I think the combination of that common platform for enablement and the common operating model around how you look at metrics, that brings the two pieces together so you can actually run the business and understand exactly where you need to focus your attention.
Yeah. So I want to go back to a tactical question. You were talking about the flywheel, and you were talking about how do we ensure a smooth handover. So if I've got a marketing qualified lead and I want to hand it over to sales, and I want to then get the feedback on what was the quality of the lead, was what you were talking to. I find this one fascinating because, you know, statistically speaking, I think it's 50% of sales reps don't follow up on marketing leads. And every day of the week, we have this conversation where sales might question the quality, or marketing might question whether sales are following up fast enough. There's this, it's almost like a divorced couple at times. I love your flywheel approach and how you talk to it. So it's sort of a tactical level. How do you ensure that smooth handover, and how do you encourage that collaboration? And, you know, I know marketing sometimes with some of the teams we work with, it's like blood from a stone to get feedback from us beloved salespeople on that quality of the lead. So how do you manage some of that?
Well, some of it has to be a service level. Well, it doesn't have to be, but one of the ways in which you can do it is through a service level agreement. So while you were asking the question, I quickly brought up some of the results that are associated with how our teams are performing against the marketing qualified leads at the moment. So for this past month, we have an average work rate across qualified leads of 86%, which I think in comparison to other companies I've worked at is phenomenal. 86% of the leads have been worked already. Now, there will be some recent leads that haven't necessarily been worked, and there'll be some individuals that probably aren't working the leads that they're receiving as quickly as possible. But that's a huge proportion of the leads that are being worked. The other thing that I always encourage in terms of the working qualified leads is the feedback process. If you're receiving a lead that you don't think is valuable as a salesperson, the worst thing that you can possibly do is ignore it. You need to provide the feedback about why that lead is not valuable, so the marketing teams can actually adjust the things that they're doing so that you can improve the quality of leads that you are receiving. So that closes that loop in terms of the process as well. The work rate is a way of monitoring whether or not people are seeing value in the leads. The rejection rate is a way of actually getting feedback with respect to what has to change with respect to those leads in the future. And like I say, we've managed to work up to 86% in terms of qualified leads that have been worked so far this month.
That is phenomenal. That is incredible. So you look at more so the service levels. So for example, you may have KPIs of sales must follow up on these leads within X time period. There's a commitment that sales must provide feedback on any of the leads so that marketing understand, you know, the quality, understand input to reiterate. So there's almost an agreement between each side of the fence of what their part of the journey is.
I'd say that it's sort of two things for me. The one part of it is what you just described, which is that agreement. Hey, Well, I agree as a person who's responsible for sales that I should be using all the leads that you as marketing are providing to me. And you agree that if I receive a lead that is not particularly good, that you will endeavor to actually look at that and adjust the leads that you're providing to me. I think that's the conversation that has to happen at the start. But if you purely just try to manage according to those numbers, it wouldn't necessarily work because then it becomes like I think I'm not a huge fan of trying to enforce service level agreements. And because I think that you can get into frustrating and argumentative type of scenarios. But that service level agreement is something that's agreed. And then the management associated with it becomes the operating model that I mentioned earlier. It says, well, why isn't this working? Instead of it being your problem or my problem, this is our problem with respect to why this isn't working that we need to solve together. So in conversations where there are discussions associated with qualified leads, it isn't sales aren't doing this or marketing aren't doing this. It's this thing isn't working and sales and marketing has to work together too, because we agreed on the service levels that we would be providing to each other to fix whatever is not working at that time.
And I'd assume the fact, assumption on my part, that you've gone down a RevOps model actually helps that, because again, it's not sales marketing problem. It's actually we're under a RevOps model.
It used to be so much harder before we had the RevOps model. Before we had the RevOps model, there would almost be this wall where you're throwing stuff over to each other. Like you had this agreement, but you were blind to what was happening in marketing, or marketing was blind to what was happening in sales. And so you'd have a little bit more adversarial type of model that existed. The wall got broken down when the RevOps group got put in place because automatically the people that are working on the numbers are part of the same function. And then it becomes, okay, well, it's not us versus you. It's we both have this problem together. And I think that's what RevOps brings, is it reduces that friction between different parts of the organization.
I love that. So I want to go through a few sales questions with you as well around what you're seeing. I'm really conscious at the moment we are seeing more, I think it was 44% of millennials want a seller-free experience. I saw recently we're starting to see businesses embrace digital and e-commerce channels that we would have probably historically gone, oh, that will never go e-commerce, or that will never be done all digital. And we're starting to see digital sales just really accelerate even more so. I'm curious to get your lens on, are you seeing that? What are you seeing so that we can start to prepare for FY24?
Well, I was looking at this question when you sent it through, and it's kind of an interesting one for us. Our business doesn't exist unless digital proliferates. And we've grown significantly through the course of the pandemic, primarily through our ability to actually help customers in terms of the adjustments that they've needed to make in the way in which they actually serve their own customers. And we continue to see that same growth going forward as well. So I think the success of companies like ours is an indication that reinforces the point that you're making with respect to the spread of digital. And we are predicting future success as well, which suggests that the trend that you're suggesting is only going to continue. I think we're, and the interesting thing for me is the individual cases associated with it. So the individual customers that come to us and say, well, I never thought that this was a particularly important area before. Companies that have existed for upwards of 50 years that have been very slow to change in terms of the way in which their businesses have operated, who are now customers of ours, who we are helping to accelerate their growth.
So actually, this takes me to a bit of a tactical question, but it's a brilliant one for HubSpot. Is if we're going down more of a digital pathway, we're seeing more RevOps and aligning teams. What's the conversation that you guys are having when you're seeing people on two different CRMs? Because I still see a lot of that one team's using HubSpot and one team's using something else. So the fact that we have two CRMs often, or some marketing email platform, and then a CRM, and sales marketing using different platforms, means it's very hard to control the experience, the alignment when we're going so fast down digital. So perfect question for HubSpot.
Totally. The thing that's beneficial with HubSpot is you don't have to use our CRM. Like our CRM is a core part of what we do, but that doesn't stop you from actually using a different CRM to connect into the tools that we have that are associated with sales, marketing, and services. And so if you feel like the investment that you've had in terms of all of your data is something that you don't necessarily want to lose, but the way in which you interact with your customers, the way in which you want to perform marketing, the way in which you want to service your customers, you want that to be different. You don't have to rely on that existing CRM to provide those services or another third-party organization to do that. You attach HubSpot on top of that to provide those services. And that goes for our most significant competitor. We interoperate really well with our most significant competitor to allow customers that want to continue to use them as a CRM to do that, but to actually use our product to run sales, marketing, and services for them.
So you still get that single view because they're speaking to each other and it's not two disparate systems. And then I guess we're now starting to see more data-driven sales, data decision-making, and so on. You now can do that because it's all integrated.
Yeah, and not just that. I think the thing that distinguishes HubSpot from most other vendors in this space, and there are hundreds of vendors in this particular space, is the fact that our product is so integrated. We haven't built a product that has come from a lot of acquisition of other companies in order to add products and try to find ways to get those products to actually work together. We've built all of our products from the ground up in order to make sure that they do fulfill that requirement that we have in terms of the flywheel operating model that we suggest for customers so that they don't end up with integration related issues. But we've created the ability to actually solve for point areas through the integrations that you can purchase that work with HubSpot or through using a third party CRM.
Yeah, I love it because I think we still see it. We still speak to a lot of customers who have got disparate systems, they don't talk to each other, and it does impact then when you're trying to run a successful customer-centric campaign.
Oh yes, very much so. It does. But there's another point to what you raised as well, is companies can be very uncertain about change. And so they might have felt that they've invested a lot of money in their CRM and they want to, but they really want to use the facilities that HubSpot adds. So this gives them a path to actually make that migration. And they can ultimately remove that CRM, which many customers do, just use our CRM instead.
Yeah, love it. So look, I'm conscious I don't have a lot of time left with you, but I have 10,000 questions I now want to ask you. So I'm going to do a quick fire round instead.
Sure.
I'm really curious, given your vast experience, around myths that you come across that you want to bust. Is there myths that you must hear every day of the week that you just go, I really want to bust that one?
The myth that I would think about is, when I first started work, and I've been working for several decades now, people were very much of the opinion telling you that you had to stay with the same company for a long period of time. Okay. And there's nothing wrong with loyalty. And some companies will do a lot to actually reward loyalty within their organizations. But the companies that aren't rewarding loyalty, it doesn't mean that you have to provide loyalty in those particular circumstances. And obviously, we've seen a lot of changes happen in organizations over the course of the last couple of months. I would say that people, the idea of just being loyal to the company, a one-sided loyalty to the company, is a myth that should be busted. People need to think about the loyalty that that company provides to them in return for the loyalty that they provide to that company, and not just provide blind loyalty to the company that they're working with. That was sort of the first one that sprung to mind when I was thinking about that question.
I get that. I worked for a large corporate for quite a number of years, and I was very, very, very much on the bandwagon. And I remember when I left thinking the whole company was going to fall apart, you know, massive global corporate, you know, because, you know, they need me. And then you realize, no, the world keeps moving and the world keeps spinning. And, you know, I think sometimes you get caught up in your own head. Maybe it is.
And not just that. Sometimes they need you to move on because they need to bring in fresh thinking and reiterate to the next level. Like, it's as important in my role, and sort of stepping aside so that fresh thought and fresh thinking and fresh ideas and even just additional energy can be brought in when after I've done a job for a certain period of time.
I know you do a lot of coaching and mentoring, and it's something you appear to be quite passionate about. If there is someone listening who is sort of up and coming in their career, they're hungry, eager beaver, is there any particular advice you find yourself giving quite often to someone at that stage of their career?
One of the things that I definitely suggest is to have more than one coach. Okay, you don't necessarily need one coach. So I believe very strongly in the principles of diversity and inclusion and belonging. And basically, what that suggests is that at the core of that, it suggests that you shouldn't be thinking of just finding a coach that's kind of like you, that you just get on really well with because they have such similar traits to you. And find a multitude of diverse coaches that can actually help you with a variety of different ideas so that you can learn. And evolve your own opinions so you can have more than one point of view about any particular solution. I find that sometimes people will just gravitate to this one person who has one way of doing things, and they think that that's the only way you have to do it. So basically, what I'm saying is, with people like me who might do a lot of coaching, don't believe everything the coach says. Find someone else for another opinion.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. And I feel like sometimes with coaches, it's point in time. There's a certain person
Yes.
that really resonates and speaks to me at that point in time in my career or when I'm facing particular challenges. And then at other points in time, it's somebody else.
Absolutely. Like, I've been working in sales for more than 30 years now. The advice that I give is probably more relevant to someone that is leading larger teams than to an individual salesperson who has been is 2 to 3 years in the role. Like, what I learned when I was 2 to 3 years into the role is probably very different to what a person should be doing today. So I'm not the coach for them, regardless of the fact that I've had that much experience and have managed to achieve the things that I have.
Yeah. So on that note, what do you think, what sort of a final question for you? What do you think one of the best investments has been in your own career? You've had a phenomenal career. You clearly are passionate about quite a few things, clearly learned some things along the way. What do you think one of your own best investments has been?
I think the money that I've spent on my own enablement has been by far the greatest benefit to me. Like, I very early on, when I discovered Harvard Business Review, I became a subscriber and have continued to be a subscriber ever since then, and read Harvard Business Review articles every single day. And they give me a multitude of different ideas for things that are beneficial in the work that I do. And I probably will remain a subscriber for a long period of time into the future. And then I also found someone who's a person called Patrick Lencioni, who's written a whole series of books about the ways in which you can run businesses more effectively. I've always learned from the stuff that he's done, tried to attend courses that he's run in order to make sure that I could sort of apply the learnings that he has from the thousands of companies that he's worked with to the things that I've done as well. Primarily, it's the money that I've personally spent, not just on the things that have added to my learning, over and above what companies have given me as enablement and development things. So, investing in yourself is what I'd probably say.
Kevin, I could talk to you all day. I have loved every single second of this. But unfortunately, I have to let you go and do your job. Where can people reach out and connect with you, and take the conversation from here?
Well, work-related things, and I do post on topics that are of interest to me that are for the professional environment. I'm quite active on LinkedIn. On the socials, it's more about who I am personally and less about who I am professionally.
Perfect. Kevin, thank you so much. You have been the most incredible guest. Thank you so much for your time.
Abby, thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to do this.
Before you leave us, doors have officially opened for our next intake of RevUp. Doors will be closing on the 30th of June. Now, if you have not heard about RevUp, this is our new revenue enablement where your revenue generating teams will all come together to learn from leading experts. The experts that we have lined up to teach the RevUp system are absolutely incredible. We have LinkedIn teaching social selling. We have Julie Masters teaching influence. We have Maz Farrelly, whose content has had 8 billion views, teaching us about storytelling and standing out from the crowd. We have Jay Pottinger teaching us about productivity and many more. We will go through the entire journey of how do you rev up your sales aligned to these leading experts. So if you want to check out Rev Up before the doors close on the 30th of June, then simply click the link in our show notes and visit member.salesredefined.com.au, and you can find out all the details you need to know, or you can book in for a chat. We love to have a chat to see whether it's the right fit for your revenue generating teams.